Hello and welcome to the X-Cast, X-Files Podwatch, episode 22. Today we are covering the episodes Fearful Symmetry and Dodd Calm. Hopefully I pronounced that second one correctly. I'm your host, Andrew Blaker, and with me is Clara Cook. Hello, Clara.
Hi, Andrew.
How are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
Well, we have got a couple episodes here to discuss. Let's start off with a fan favorite, Fearful Symmetry. This is the 18th episode of the second season, originally aired on February 24th, 1995, written by Steve DeJarnatt, directed by James Whitmore Jr. Mulder and Scully investigate claims of an invisible elephant escaped from a local zoo, from which the story spirals involving animal rights activists, possible extraterrestrial DNA implanted in zoo animals, and a gorilla who learned sign language. Did you get all that, Clara?
Just about.
So as I said, tongue in cheek, this is not a fan favorite for most fans. But I wanted to start off by kind of accentuating the positive, if there is any. Clara, what did you like about this episode?
So I actually like the idea of an invisible elephant. I think it's quite effective. I think the teaser is very effective. I think I like the idea of these night workers. So the dancing janitor cleaning the floor and the engineers or building, basically the builders working on the road, and everyone being freaked out by the vibration and the shaking and then this massive invisible force coming through. I thought that was quite effective. I actually also like the idea of an X-File episode with an environmental message. The problem is it's just done in such a heavy-handed and unsubtle way in this episode that we get bogged down in the sort of politics and the zoo and all that kind of thing. It's not very good in the end. It's not very effective. But I do like the idea of the X-Files using climate change and using endangered species as a subject and a storyline. I just think the script is so written so badly. And also the visual effects. I mean, Sophie, the gorilla, the talking gorilla, is such an obviously an animatronic. Animatronic, I think it's called?
yes. Yeah.
She's so obviously a model, you know, a moving model. And I think in the scenes where she moves and she actually does attack people, I assume that must be a man in a gorilla suit. I mean, I'm just guessing here because it just doesn't look very realistic. And I think they're working with the props they had at the time in the 90s. So I guess I should be a bit more forgiving about that. There are some serious plot holes to the story, and the environmental message is just really hammered home in a really what I feel like is a very unsubtle sort of sanctimonious kind of preachy way.
Well, and you know, let's be real here. When the X-Files takes on a controversial subject, climate change, environmental concerns, religion, Chris Carter, I'm looking at you for Babylon. They don't do subtle very well. Okay, it usually comes across as extraordinarily heavy-handed and pedantic. You know, like you're lecturing your audience, and which no one wants. So, no, and this episode is one of the earliest instances of that. It wasn't written by Chris Carter, wasn't directed by Chris Carter, but, you know, it's not just him. It's the show has a tendency to do that when they get a little heavy-handed at times with a important message. I think they oversell it. So I definitely am with you on that. I know, which, and again, yes, strong environmental message, which is good. And I remember when I first watched this several years ago. I was in college, and a friend and I went through the entire series, and I don't remember watching this one. I'm sure we did. It's possible I fell asleep, but I remember when I first tried to watch it, it took two or three times before I could even finish the episode. I just got really bored with it. Like you said, it was a strong teaser. I don't know what it was. I don't know what it is about the animals involved, if it's that or what, but it just could not hold my attention. Like you said, a lot going on. I liked the whole possible alien DNA question. Basically, you have a zoo who they have never produced, I believe, a live animal birth. And then all of a sudden, you find out that the elephant is pregnant, and Sophie, the gorilla, is pregnant, and Mulder suspects it's alien experimentation, which I thought was an interesting angle to do. Perhaps a little unbelievable, but it was intriguing. But overall, it was just very underwhelming, don't you think?
Yeah, and I think that if you wanted to use animals in X-Files, I mean, X-Files doesn't have a great record for using animals as a plot device or a plot storyline. But I think if you did, you could do it in a much more interesting way. And I personally think alien abduction of animals, I think, is a bit of an easy cop-out for, like, oh, we want to do a show and we want to do an episode about our species being endangered. I know, let's have species be abducted by aliens and then impregnated. It just feels, just because we're talking about the X-Files doesn't mean that everything has to be alien abduction related. And I guess I just didn't buy that aliens would abduct these animals, impregnate them, and then drop them in the wrong place. Invisibly in the wrong place. I thought if aliens were going to be advanced enough to be able to save a species from extinction, I would think that they'd be able to save them by putting them back in the zoo or putting them in the right place. And there were some good scenes. Like, as usual, there are scenarios where the characters are put in scenarios that I really would like to know more about and I'd like to see them in. So when Scully's doing an autopsy on an elephant, I thought that was kind of neat. And I would have liked that to be a bit longer or maybe slightly more, conversation about the fact that she's doing an autopsy on an elephant. She doesn't mention it. She just says, I'm not really sure I'm qualified to do this.
Right.
So I like seeing my characters in different scenarios. And so that's kind of, I say my characters, I feel like they're mine, but they're not mine. I like seeing Chris Carter's characters in different scenarios. So that was kind of interesting. But yeah, I don't know. I think I fell asleep the first time I watched it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it has that effect on people. And I don't know, I could be completely wrong on this. This is just off the cuff, but the writer, Steve Jarnat, whatever. I don't think he wrote another X-Files episode. I'm not saying it had to do with this. I don't know. It's just speculation. I don't believe I've come across his name on any of the other episodes. I could be wrong on that, but just speculation.
It's interesting, also coming from my point of view as a real animal lover, I'm fascinated by the natural world and deeply concerned about climate change. So you would think this episode would appeal to me, but one thing I noticed watching it this time around was how little you see of the animals. And I understand for part of it they're supposed to be invisible, like an invisible force, that's the sort of threatening element of it. And I understand the X-Files had a budget constraints, so they couldn't show, such live animals. But if the episode really is about animals and about the possibility of species going extinct, and it is trying to drive home that sort of didactic message, then why not show them more, and show how interesting and beautiful they are. And I think you could have done that with some good photography. So I was quite surprised at how little we actually see the animals in this situation, despite the fact that the whole story seems to revolve around them. We spend much more time seeing empty cages, damage the animals have done, and talking to different zookeepers or animal rights people or people involved with the animals who keep hammering home about how important the animals are, but we never really see them. So we can't care about the central storyline if we're not exposed to it, if you see what I'm saying.
Exactly. Well, and like you said, this is evidence piece number one that the X-Files does not do animal episodes very well. They really don't. I mean, you've got this, you've got season 3's Teso Dos Bicos, which, and you've got, I think it's season 6, you've got Alpha. And I'm sure there are a couple others, but I mean, three right there that are almost unanimously not very good episodes. So well, let's move right on along to episode 19 of season 2, Dod Kalm. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly. In Norwegian, that translates as Dead Calm. This episode originally aired on March 10th, 1995, written by Howard Gordon, with a teleplay credit to Howard Gordon and Alex Gansa. Those are two prolific X-Files writers, directed by the equally prolific Rob Bowman. In this episode, Mulder and Scully investigate a case of rapid aging aboard a mysterious Norwegian crew vessel. I don't know off the top of my head what the general fan reaction is to this, like I would Fearful Symmetry, but I rather like this episode. What do you think of this one, Clara?
Yeah, I really like this episode. Rapid aging is it's not a new plot device. So rapid aging is something that has happened in other episodes of other TV series, but it's done really effectively here. It is something about the way that they age, and it's more than just aging. It's like everything in the ship is eroding, and they're almost kind of sort of exuding salt, really. So, sort of like almost like they're shrinking from lack of water, kind of becoming prunes, really. And I just think it's really effective. It's the whole episode is just really sinister and dark. They're sort of trapped in this abandoned ship. Feels very claustrophobic, very sort of metallic and echoey. I love that they travel abroad when they leave America. I love that they go to the Norwegian coast to find this ship. I love the music as well. I love that sort of, I don't know what you'd call it, like a sonar sound, like an echoing kind of boom that sort of sounds like the sound that a submarine would make. And it's instigated in almost like a metal pipe hitting another metal pipe and echoing. And it's sort of inserted in the soundtrack, and it's really effective, actually.
I think this is one of those, it's one of those paranoid, claustrophobic type episodes, like Ice, like Darkness Falls. The episodes where, you have a very limited setting. I mean, they are on board the ship for almost the entire episode, and, you know, everything that happens occurs in one setting, and obviously they're going to die is what they're thinking. So I think the atmosphere of it is, atmosphere is just so pivotal to this episode, and I think they did well with it. The makeup may be a little obvious, a little heavy-handed, but hey, you know, it was the 90s, what are you going to do? But yeah, I mean, I really like this episode. Like you said, I liked that you don't know what the cause is. You know, Mulder has this whole Philadelphia experiment idea that, you know, they're in some sort of time warp, or I think he calls it a wrinkle in time. But then, and then, you know, Scully wonders, maybe it has to do with the salt content where they are. And I mean, you know, there's multiple reasons that could explain what's going on. And then, of course, you have Trondheim. Is that the guy's name?
Yes, Trondheim. Yeah.
Trondheim. Okay. Who, you know, just goes off the deep end. It reminded me a lot of Ice in terms of the mounting tension, the mounting paranoia and everything. And then towards the end of the episode, I felt like it just got very elegiac, if you will. I actually wanted to, my most favorite thing about this episode, and this may seem extremely random, but I wanted to read this quote it's toward the end where they do think that they're going to die. And Scully has a journal that she's writing in about what she sees as, you know, her death, and I just thought this was incredible dialogue. She's narrating here. I found a children's book of Norse legends. From what I can tell, the pictures show the end of the world, not in a sudden firestorm of damnation as the Bible teaches us, but in a slow covering blanket of snow. First, the moon and the stars will be lost in a dense white fog, then the rivers and the lakes and the sea will freeze over. Finally, a wolf named Skull will open his jaws and eat the sun, sending the world into an everlasting night. I think I hear the wolf at the door. I mean, maybe it's the English major in me, but I when I first heard that, I just loved that metaphor that they give. I mean, and they did it very convincingly, I felt like. You know, they truly do, you know, they're in the middle of the ocean, they're not likely to be rescued, and so I thought that was a really nice touch to that episode.
Yeah, it's a very poetic ending, actually. I think that, yeah, I agree with you, that was one of my favourite bits of the episode, and in similar to Ice, this story, I mean, with Ice, obviously there is a paranormal mystery going on they're trying to solve, but it's also about, the story is also about Mulder and Scully trusting each other, and about people trusting each other and turning on each other in desperate situations. And so it's like an episode with two themes. And this episode, I think, also has two themes. It's the mystery of the rapid aging and the corroding of the ship and why and how. But there's also this other theme, which is the confrontation of death, basically. And I feel that it's a test to all the characters to see how they will confront death. And Trondheim doesn't confront it very well. And he confronts it by betraying he doesn't confront it at all. He runs away from it and betrays the rest of the group, or portrays Mulder and Scully, essentially dooming them to die. But Mulder and Scully confront death quite gracefully. I mean, Mulder grumbles about it, and he seems slightly less comfortable about it, but Scully reassures him. And she confronts the possibility of dying quite gracefully, really. And so in a way, that's kind of one of the themes of the story, I think, is this kind of idea of how you confront old age, how you accept death.
Yes, I felt like they kind of blended the whole mystery. I mean, there's not a lot of action in the episode. There really isn't. I mean, it's very much kind of like a meditation, and it kind of blends the spiritual with the mystery, I thought, pretty well. I think reaction was overall pretty mixed to it. I mean, I don't think it was one that anyone would necessarily claim as their all-time favorite, but I think most of the ratings were pretty mixed to positive. I think like you said, the atmosphere is everything there. The atmosphere and the dialogue, like I said, this was Howard Gordon, and I felt like he was a really good writer on this.
Yeah, the way it's filmed as well. So the sort of one of the last scenes on the ship where Scully's writing in her diary, like you say, writing about this Norse legend of the end of the world, the camera sort of pans, I think it pans away or it pans across, and she's sitting in what looks like to be the belly of the ship, this sort of long metallic, long sort of steel-like room. It's just beautifully filmed. I think a lot of credit has to go to Scully in this episode. And I'm a massive Mulder fan, but I think in this episode, I think Scully really deserves the prize because she stays calm throughout most of it. And she's still, like, she's getting her science on, you know? She's still doing experiments and writing down notes, even when she's aging and dying.
Exactly.
And it's her notebook that actually saves Mulder's life in the end, and her notes. So while everyone else is panicking and fighting with each other, she's, you know, still being the sort of rational scientist, and that's what actually gets them out of the situation. Well, they get rescued, but then her notes actually save him, so, and save her. So I think that's a good part of the story.
Yeah, no, overall I really like this episode. Definitely one of the stronger Monster of the Week episodes for me for the second season.
Well, I guess I would say that I do think there was one very funny thing about .com, which is that everyone seems to get crankier as they get older. Which I thought was a funny twist, really, because I'm not sure that does really happen to people when they get older. I mean, I guess that's a stereotype of older people. No, they're just two very contrasting episodes, aren't they? You know, and I think Fearful Symmetry is perhaps maybe initially a much more interesting idea than .com. You know, finding this ship in the middle of the ocean where people just age rapidly sounds a bit more ridiculous. But it's all in the execution, isn't it? It's all in the execution. It's in the script. It's how, yes, you film it. It's the music. It's how you act it. And Fearful Symmetry is missing everything that .com has, basically.
Exactly. That is an excellent way to sum it up. Yeah. Thank you, Clara, for joining me today. And thank you, viewers, listeners, I'm sorry. Please follow us on social media. We are on Twitter. We are on Facebook. Twitter handle @X_cast. The XCast podcast group on Facebook. Upcoming episodes. We will have episode 23, which will cover the next two episodes, Humbug, as well as the Kalusari, next on the XCast Podwatch. Thank you for joining us today, Clara. Thank you so much. Great to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And everyone, until next time, remember, trust no one.